Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz and I'm the editor-in-chief of the Science of Psychotherapy, and I'm here with Richard Hill, managing editor. Howdy, Richard.
Yeah, look, I must be here because it's podcast time.
It is.
Indeed. And it's really cool because one of my really good mates from the Milton Erickson stuff that I do over the last decade, and I've probably known this guy for a while, surprised me with who we're going to see.
Okay. We've got a lot of mates of yours recently, which is really good. So we're going over to talk to Rick Miller, and he is a clinical social worker in private practice in Boston and on Cape Cod. That sounds nice, doesn't it, Richard?
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Rick has developed a curriculum for hypnotherapy with gay men, including customized scripts. He's one of the first people in the world to produce these mind-body scripts for gay men. He does teaching. He's got a few books, Unwrapped, Integrative Therapy with Gay Men and the Gift of Presence. And he's got another book about mindfulness.
Yes, he has indeed. And this is the one that is Mindfulness Tools for Gay Men and Therapy. So this is particularly for therapists. And it's great. I mean, Rick's gay himself, and he just became someone that people came to. And then all this wonderful work, because he's so wise and intelligent, a great therapist, and applying this sort of stuff to the gay community, as he finds, is so important. And he'll talk to us about that and about his film project and all kinds of really cool things that he's been doing.
Awesome. Okay, let's go across and say hi to Rick. Rick Miller, thank you for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. It's so great to have you here on the show.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Hi, Rick, and I'm here too. I was really pleased to see you again because I haven't seen you in ages and I miss you.
Well, we have an incredible connection, you and I, and I'm thrilled to be part of this.
Oh, that's lovely.
So, guys, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the connection, and maybe we can get some background of where Rick has come from.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've certainly Rick's been invited, besides the fact that I've known him for many years through the Milton Erickson Foundation. I just attended a conference a year ago, whenever we were allowed to travel last.
Yeah.
And just Rick's presentation was so enormous. I've written about it at the Erickson newsletter. It was probably the best thing at the conference and should be at the evolution of psychotherapy, because I think that's what he's doing. So anyway, that's okay. So I got all excited and said to Rick, let's do it. It took a while. We got in here. So it might be an idea, Rick, just to give a bit of a background of the fascinating area you work in. Yeah. And also the books you're doing. We'll have those in the show notes and just get it.
Why don't I give you the 30-second or 45-second version of who I am?
The elevator speech.
Yes. The elevator speech, right. So I'm a psychotherapist, and I'm located in Boston and Cape Cod, Massachusetts. And I'm a gay male, and I'm out as a gay male therapist. And though it's not the only work that I do, I've found my niche in training mental health practitioners and medical doctors about working with gay men. And I talk about the nuances of growing up gay, how providers can best treat their gay male clients, and we can go into greater detail with that. And I've written a couple of books, which are for clinicians. One is called Unwrapped, Integrative Therapy with Gay Men, and the other one is called Mindfulness Tools for Gay Men in Therapy, A Clinician's Guide. So as Richard said, I do a lot of teaching as well. And about 2 years ago, I started a project called Gay Sons and Mothers. And I'm looking at the emotional relationship between gay men and their mothers through videos and photos. It's a creative, exciting, energetic look at these relationships. And that's me in a nutshell.
It's beautiful, and the Gay Sons and Mothers video programs were the central focus of the presentation we were at. And I tell you what, there were many tears rolling down people's cheeks,
and not one box of Kleenex in the room,
and not one box of Kleenex in the room. But I know your capacities as a psychotherapist and as just as a beautiful human being, you know, broadly, you know, a broad and wide ranging, and as you say, that sort of created this niche. I would just like to put it more that the niche has found you. that there was a great need, because there's nuances in each different social group, and those and the nature of the way they function, and this is something that was. Having a great deal of, well, ignorance in one sense, which is what we also talk about in all kinds of prejudice, as we know, Jane Elliott talks about that. Our problem is not prejudice; it's ignorance. Mm-hmm. And the other one is just I don't know. Just I like to leave you to explain it to us, but there's sort of a like, it's all okay for you now.
Thank you for bringing that up. I'm so glad you mentioned that.
Yeah.
So a lot of studies, new studies, are showing that medical providers and mental health providers are not getting enough training with the LGBTQ population. And they think they do. They think they know all that they need to know. And in fact, they do not. And that is how I start my workshops, showing them the statistics of this number. And it's pretty scary. And the other thing that's interesting is that whenever I present, frequently my workshops are on the last slot, the last day of a conference, and I get a very low turnout. And so conference invitees, it's all about the metrics of the speaker. And because my topic is something that is not of interest to people, even though it should be, I don't get a huge turnout. And as a result, I don't get a slot that's bigger. And what this speaks to is homophobia in our culture. And men in particular, physicians, psychotherapists, educators, are slightly afraid of this topic and don't show up for trainings. And then frequently there's a small group of women who come in who are working with gay men and want to know the ins and outs of things. But what people frequently say is, isn't everything all better now? Aren't gay men accepted more? The answer is yes. Gay men are accepted in a way that it's never happened before. And that's incredibly exciting. But gay boys are still growing up in secret, in a lot of pain, fearful of coming out, struggling with their families, frequently depending on their cultural group and their ethnicity and their race. They're being raised in cultures that are not supporting them. Sometimes they're in physical danger of their lives. So it's still a struggle. And I'm thrilled to see how things are moving ahead and how more gay men are accepted. And as a result, gay men can live in the mainstream in various places. But everyone still has their struggle and their process to go through. And frequently, they will lie to their doctors or not tell their therapist about their sexual life because they're too ashamed. And the reason why my career has been successful as a gay male therapist is that gay men would come see me as early as the early 80s, knowing that I was gay, and they could talk about whatever they wanted. So it's all very interesting.
Mm. Mm. Both Richard and I, we come out of sort of the arts and entertainment world, where gay men, you know, have been very much, you know, accepted part of the establishment, I guess, for many generations. And I would have thought that in the world of psychotherapy that there wouldn't have been such a negative bias, but I'm hearing something different from you.
Yeah, I think that if you ask people if they're prejudiced, they don't say yes until recently with Black Lives Matter. So if you ask people if they understand gay men and they're accepting towards gay men or the LGBTQ population, they would say, of course I am. When in fact, as you kind of look a little bit deeper, it's an ignorance and a lack of education that people are dealing with, which is why getting education is so important.
There's a difference between acceptance, which I think is, I think there is a great deal more acceptance, and having a sensitive appreciation.
Yes.
And it is interesting. I mean, what Matt says, you know, coming from the entertainment world, I mean, the majority of males that I knew were, so it would have been 60 or 70% of the population, which was excellent. I mean, I think I went into the theater to get girls because there were lots of girls there and most of the guys were gay, you know.
It was all set. You might have been hit on by a couple guys too, I would guess.
Oh, no, constantly. But it was lovely. I remember a lovely lad, and he would always bump up to me at parties and he'd say, "Oh, have you turned yet?" And I'd say, "You know, it doesn't work like that." And he'd say, "Oh dear." And you know, we'd have a lovely chat and have a lot of fun and games.
And I
think what is really interesting, and I'll just share this with you and everybody, that I had a beautiful friend. And it was gay. And I was spending a lot of time doing a lot of things. There was business. We were doing theatre stuff. We had a project going on. And the relationship was developing in a very heartfelt way, as well as in a business way. And I do remember an evening, and we had dinner. We were talking about bits and pieces. And if I had a sexual orientation towards a male, then I would have had a sexual engagement or a sensual engagement on that day.
Yeah.
There literally wasn't. There literally wasn't. And he was a very lovely person and there was no difficulty.
But you know what's incredible?
It was a good experience.
And you were giving him a good experience. And one of the reasons why I've connected with you always, Richard, is that you're face and your smile is so warm and welcoming. And not everyone is like that. And gay men who experience other men who welcome them in such an open way actually receive healing from these interactions. So my guess is that you were giving your friend way more than you even realized.
That's very, very nice to hear. It was But I think the best thing in there is that I was able to test my own.
Yeah.
Understand. Yeah. I was able to understand that it was that your sexuality is just a very natural and unquestionable sort of element in your life. Sorry, Matt.
No, you're right. Rick, can I appeal to the trainer in you?
Yes.
And I'm wondering, it might be a tall order, but are we able to get some tips for the practicing psychotherapist?
Yeah.
You know, from your experience and your knowledge.
Yes.
That we can sort of take away from today's conversation.
Absolutely. The very most important point is that as a clinician, you are sincere and welcoming with your gay male clients because we as the gay male client, have experienced bias in the world. And when we go to your offices, we are going to be extra careful with the assumption that you're not going to understand us, that we can't be ourselves, and that we have to conceal things in our lives that we've concealed everywhere else. And if you are able to show a sincere, generous, accepting stance, which is coming from the heart, you are going to win your clients over. And the success of treatment will be just that. So one of the premises of my training is that when people come to you for a particular problem and you're working on that issue with them, that's great. But there's a whole issue going on behind the scenes, which is the acceptance that you are giving them, which is giving them a greater level of healing in a much larger, much more profound way. And it's been interesting. I've been a gay male therapist for 35 years, sitting in an office with my door closed and no one sees what I do. It's very safe. And then suddenly my first book came out, Unwrapped, and I'm suddenly on the teaching circuit and I'm at book signing parties and I can no longer hide behind the closed door. Suddenly I'm in the public meeting new people. I'm the expert talking about things, and it's frightening for me, especially at the beginning, because who am I? I've been hiding my whole life. Suddenly I'm in the limelight. So it was an interesting lesson for me to appreciate not only did I have something to offer people, but I couldn't hide anymore. And so that's, you want to welcome your clients. The relationship is so profound.
There's something interesting in what you're saying there, because it's very exciting. Matt and I have been asked by Norton to write a book on the science of psychotherapy. So,
oh, wonderful.
So we're going into all kinds of areas like genetics and gut brain axis and all kinds of really interesting bits and pieces. And one of the things I've been looking at is this big talk about the heart and the sense of the heart. And the beautiful thing you said there, you know, from the heart. And one of the comments I've just written that chapter is that we talk about the heart, and I know some people talk about the heart having emotions and intelligence and wisdom. It doesn't. The brain has that's mm-hmm. that's a cognitive thing.
Yeah.
But what it does is it has a sense of what is naturally good, mm-hmm. what is naturally well. And yes. we've got this thing called heart rate variability, where the body goes into a state of being saying, this is a good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really interesting. And what I wrote down as you were saying is that there's a natural wellness state when we have engagement with the other.
Mm. Yes. Yes.
And when we have concern and distrust of the other, then our heart rate variability changes and various other things happen in the heart. And the heart brain sends this message to our thinking brain, and our thinking brain goes, I don't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's that thing. So in there, in that sincere and welcoming, that thing, be accepting, it gives you the opportunity to say, wow, why aren't I accepting of the other who's not hurting, you know, when I'm not in danger, right. and so on and so forth.
Yes. Yeah.
So what are the dangers that people, that you find in your research, before you go on to the next bit of therapeutic stuff, what are the dangers that people tend to say they feel or that they are told that they are presenting to people?
So you're talking about from a patient perspective, correct? I just want to make sure I'm
saying. Yes, from the patient perspective. They come saying, people think I'm dangerous. Why do they think I'm going to, you know, what are the sorts of things that people tend to convey or fear? Of someone who's
the biggest thing is just not being understood and not being accepted.
Yeah.
And for a boy who grows up being criticized by his community or beat up by his father or beat up by his classmates because he was effeminate, he goes into the world not feeling safe. And frequently clients who have gone into therapy and haven't felt accepted, or as I mentioned earlier, clients that go to see a medical doctor and they don't feel accepted by the doctor, again, the theme is acceptance, they end up leaving off the most important parts of themselves and they don't receive the care that ultimately they deserve and that they should be getting. So they're bringing the world is a dangerous place along with them. Interesting that when I frequently meet a client for the first time, I read their body language, you know, in just a flash, and I get a sense of their comfort or their discomfort. Some people can't look at me. Some people look at me and smile. Some people are rigid in their posture, and you can tell that they've been holding tension in their body their entire lives. And sometimes I think my role is to help them shift that state into something softer, more gentle, more easy. And sometimes I do that just through the interactions that I have with people. And sometimes I lead them through mindfulness exercises or hypnosis exercises to recognize that they can find a soft spot inside of themselves that they don't believe they have. gay men have learned not to utilize any strength inside of themselves, and they don't believe that they have the capacity for self-soothing. So when I'm able to do a mindfulness exercise with a client and he learns that he has something inside of himself that he can rely on, it's pretty magical. It's really, really profound. So I don't know if I fully answered your question.
No, that's beautiful. That's lovely and beautiful. And it's interesting, Matt, we just had the other day one of our authors writing that he was criticized, and he's not gay, fine, but he was criticized for describing a boy, and I think it was a boy's face, as beautiful.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and that was an interesting thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I? You just mentioned. You've come from an Ericksonian foundation,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So a word about how that plays into.
It's wonderful. Yeah. So my training actually is psychodynamic and psychoanalytic, which is very distant and, in my opinion, shaming. Mm-hmm. And so again, I started my career behind closed doors. Except that I had a personality always. I always use humor. I always used myself. What I'm speaking like now is exactly what I'm like in my sessions, but I couldn't let anyone know it. And then I got into the Ericksonian world of psychotherapy, a world that is filled with creativity, expression, synchronicity, and I was struck that I found a home for myself that allowed me to be who I am without even having to try. And as I've kind of honed in on these skills even more, my clinical acumen and my practice has grown tremendously. When I started doing hypnosis with gay men, no one left therapy. I thought it would be a short-term stint doing hypnosis. Everyone stayed forever because it was touching something deep inside of them. So I love the fact that with Ericksonian work, we can kind of attune ourselves to the sensibility of the people that we're working with and find a way of connecting based on that, based on their own sensibility. And that creates amazing success in therapy. And you don't have to be a gay therapist with a gay client to do that. That's the good news.
Yeah, yeah. Because everybody, to some extent, is coming to a session with some diminishment in their sense of acceptance, in their sense of feeling whole, and the sense of feeling held. Mm-hmm. And this is what we talk about in trauma therapy. The first thing to do is to try and create the space and then hold the space as what I call as the movement from the disintegrating sort of mindset into a therapeutic mindset.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the next question, and I know we might be going off sort of a lovely sequence you have in the way you describe things, but that thing of enabling that strength, bringing up that wholeness in a client, how difficult has it been, and how difficult is it? Sort of a bit of a question: is there a shift? But are individuals still expressing great difficulty in finding that?
So I think we get to have fun as clinicians. And if we allow ourselves to have fun, we can create a connection with our clients that's going to make the work really profound and powerful. And I'm on Cape Cod right now where I have a home office, and I've had a home office for 25 years. And I have a garden, I have a car, I have a dog that gets loose, I have a water view from my house. So there's all these topics of conversation that we can relate about even before they walk in the door. And that's growing a strength in the relationship and promoting a bond between us that works really well. And so my psychoanalytic supervisors would have said to me that I was acting boundaryless by having these conversations, or that I was engaging in a transgression in the therapy, whereas in the Ericksonian world, what I'm doing, but I'm also enjoying myself, is creating a context for relating, which ultimately is empowering a client to be able to experience a state inside of themselves that's a positive state that's ready to make change because something good is happening inside. So that just excites me to no end. Then there's the whole issue of humor, something that Richard doesn't know anything about.
Apologies.
Humor goes a long way in psychotherapy. And frequently I can make a very important point with humor and someone will be able to receive it in a way that they wouldn't if I weren't doing it with some kind of humor. One of my areas of interest is masculinity and working with men and how we can welcome men into treatment to get them motivated to want to stay, but also to want to change, which means working on vulnerabilities, which we've all, as men, been taught not to be. And so it's just really interesting to me that the way we're going to do it is not by shaming people into feeling like they're dumb jerks, but instead to welcome them based on their own sensibilities to find the way in. And that's how we get to vulnerability.
Right. A few points there. I think, you know, bringing people into your own space with a home office is a very different dynamic, isn't it, to office in town. And so coming into your own space, it's like you say, not only are there, you know, topics of conversation because of what's going around, but bringing someone into your space is a very intimate sort of dynamic that's going on there.
I've had many nightmares where my clients have come in and I'm like naked on the couch, or I have dirty laundry in my office and I'm out of sorts. All those fun things.
I know two good therapists you can. There was a lovely thing that also another one of our writers, Matt, said, Ken Bonneau, lovely article. And he said this. What he talks about is to be delighted in yourself. Mm. And then for the other is to be delighted in their delight.
And so true.
And this is what I'm seeing, I'm hearing in you, is first of all, you build them and create a situation where they feel delightful in themselves. And then they bask and bask? Is that the...
Yeah.
But they feel that warmth of your delight in
Absolutely.
Them being...
Yeah. It's so satisfying.
Rick, I've got another question about, so gay clients, when they're looking for a therapist, do you think that there is a preconceived bias, whether they think that they're going to be more accepted by a male or a female therapist? If you could speak to that.
Great question. Most gay men are afraid to work with men.
Okay.
Unless they know that they're gay, because they assume that they're not going to be understood. And I frequently mention at trainings that a gay male client who works with a straight male therapist has the best opportunity for healing that there is.
Right.
But it means taking risk, and some won't be willing to do it. I think it's also true that a gay man that works with a straight woman also has the potential for healing, based on the acceptance that I was talking about earlier. But frequently gay men want to work with another gay male, because there's no explanations needed about certain experiences or certain aspects of the gay community. And even though that's in fact true, it's also a little more safe.
Right.
And sometimes there's the issue of competition between two gay men and who's the better a gay person. Sometimes people are threatened by me because I have an urban look to the clothes that I wear, and they think that I won't care about them or that I'm going to treat them horribly like other gay men. Sometimes gay male clients are resentful that I'm thin, and that I'm not going to understand their struggle if they struggle with body issues and weight. The whole thing is just very interesting.
Right.
Yeah, I was wondering too, I mean, obviously your work is in America predominantly.
Yeah.
Do you have any sort of thoughts or insights into other countries? Are there other, on an international level, have you sort of done any work there at all?
The work that I've done internationally is through the mental health community and engaging in workshops and trainings and conferences. And what I've found is that there are some countries that are incredibly progressive and accepting, and then there are other countries who are just way, way, way behind. And I am always thrilled to be able to create a presence and ignite an energy or a fire under medical providers and clinicians. The other thing that I'm working on, hopefully very soon, is establishing a larger YouTube presence so that I can get followers from all over the world. And one of my dreams is to have a support group for gay men that I lead maybe once a month or every 2 weeks that wouldn't be psychotherapy because I can't do that based on licensing requirements, but I could offer my expertise in a support group for gay men all over the world. And I think it would be a really rich, exciting experience. What I find as I teach and also with gay sons and mothers as I present, that I'm making connections with people all over the world, and they are so appreciative of the experience that I bring, the fact that I'm out, the expertise that I have. It's really exciting.
Well, you'll be pleased. This podcast was certainly, we're doing our best to expand ourselves all over the world as well. Great. So we've got although we do have quite a lot of people in America, but yeah. We've just had a couple of our wonderful friends from Italy doing some things.
Great.
We've got a great psychiatrist that we talk to every now and again in Alexandria in Egypt, which is
fantastic.
So all these things are really important. And I think, just reminding, from the Ericksonian point of view, Erikson said the purpose of the therapist is to shift the responsibility of effective therapy back to the client. Mm-hmm. So even when you're just doing presence, bringing people together, and in fact, probably the less therapy you do can even be beneficial because it enhances the client. I think that we must see what we can do to help with that, because that if there's anything we can do. Because that'd be great.
I love to talk about that. I lead groups. I do 3 groups in my private practice, 2 in Boston, 1 on Cape Cod. And you get people in a group together, and their ability to help each other is so profound and so exciting.
Yeah. Now, one thing, we're probably sort of getting around the wind-up time-ish a bit. The thing, Rick, that with this video, with this the program, Gay Sons and Mothers, yes. Now, is that accessible to people, or how do they access that? What's the process?
Thank you. So please follow us.
Yeah.
We have a website, gaysonsandmothers.org, gaysonsandmothers.org. We have an Instagram page called Gay Sons and Mothers, all one word. And we have a Facebook page called Gay Sons and Mothers. So we're out there. And it's so exciting. I've been interviewing people, falling in love with mothers and sons, and hearing incredible stories and painful stories. And it transcends beyond being gay, because everyone relates to stories revolving acceptance, rejection, coming together. I mean, it's so profound.
And I'm just thinking I should just jump on Facebook. Straight people welcome in the Facebook group.
Absolutely. The more the merrier. Please join us.
Brilliant.
I'm always trying to increase our following.
Yeah.
And so please, whoever is listening to this, please look us up on social media.
Yeah, I'm joining straight up as soon as we finish.
Beautiful. Yeah. Rick, give us one more takeaway before we leave.
Oh my God, a takeaway. The takeaway would be, if you can help a gay male client find a comfortable place in his body in a psychotherapy session, then you're giving him a gift that he has access to within himself, that he can go back to over and over and over again. That would be a takeaway.
Okay, that is awesome.
Beautiful.
Rick Miller, thank you so much for joining us here on the Science
thank
of Therapy podcast.
In a ball.
And I'll see you next time I'm allowed to travel.
Okay, thanks, Rick. We'll catch you later. Bye-bye.
Now, I don't think it's too hard, Matt, to say, mm-hmm. What a nice fella.
No, he was a really nice bloke there.
Isn't he nice? He's such a nice human being. Yeah. And I think I wonder whether
He was excited to be sort of, he had the mantle put on him to do this work. But whether he expected it or didn't expect it, he's really lifted himself to the challenge and to the opportunity. It sounds like he's doing lots and lots of really wonderful work.
Yes, he is. And as always, we will leave links in the show notes so you can go across and have a look at the great stuff that he is doing there. Now, if you appreciate what we're doing here on The Science of Psychotherapy, you can support us. Richard, how can people support us?
Well, there's a few ways that you can support us. You can just join in with the programs that we do on the podcast. Leave a comment, leave a something, because that's great to that builds our presence. We have a monthly magazine, and we also have a training program, an academy where you can have videos and reading programs that give you certificates for education points. And that's just a very inexpensive yearly subscription, and you can become part of our subscribers, which also, oh my gosh, which includes the groups, the
mastermind.
The mastermind groups that we do once a month, and that gets us people from all around the world talking to therapists, talking to therapists.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of things we can do for a simple subscription, or otherwise just join us in a lot of the free things we do.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'd love to have you as part of the tribe. Well, Richard, been a pleasure as always.
Tribe of two to start off with.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.